Okay, picture this. You're standing on a car dealership lot. You're looking at something brand new, maybe a sedan, maybe a crossover. It's just pristine. The lines are sharp. The paint is absolutely flawless under the lights. And, you know, you do that thing, you reach out and you tap the hood.
The knuckle test.
It's a knuckle test, and it sounds solid. It feels rigid. It gives you that tactile feeling that this thing is going to protect you out on the highway.
It's a very specific sensory experience, isn't it? That thud tells you it's a well-engineered machine.
It does. But here's the thing. Here's the problem with that feeling.
Right.
If that steel was that hard when they were building the car, they never would have been able to build it in the first place.
Right. You're touching on the central paradox of automotive manufacturing.
It's this massive contradiction. I mean, to make that hood, you have to stamp a flat sheet of steel into this really complex 3D shape. If the steel is hard, it just cracks.
Or it destroys the stamping die.
Exactly. So you need the metal to be soft, almost like a pie crust, to shape it. But the second it hits the road, you need it to be rock hard.
You need a material with a split personality, Dr. Jekyll in the factory, Mr. Hyde on the highway.
And today we are diving deep into the science of exactly how that happens. Because it turns out the secret isn't in the stamping press, it's in the paint shop. We are unpacking a PhD thesis by Saurav Das on bake hardening in low and medium carbon steels. And I have to say, this research takes something as like mundane as drying paint and turns it into this high-stakes metallurgical chess match.
It really does. Das's work is a fantastic example of what we call process metallurgy. It shows how we're not just relying on the material's raw ingredients, but on the timeline of how those ingredients are treated.
Specifically, how a 20-minute bake cycle completely changes the atomic architecture of your car.
Exactly.
But before we get into all that atomic shuffling, let's just set the stakes. Why go through all this trouble? We have high-strength alloys. Why not just stamp those with more force?
Well, it really comes down to two things: geometry
And regulation.
and regulation. You can stamp high-strength steel, but you lose what's called formability. You just can't get those sharp aerodynamic lines that the modern cars have.
Okay.
But more importantly, manufacturers are under this immense pressure to reduce weight for fuel efficiency, for emissions standards.
So they use thinner steel.
Exactly. They are shaving millimeters off the thickness of the body panels. But if you make a panel thinner, it gets flimsy. It'll dent if you lean on it.
Right.
So if you're going to send it out, you have to increase its yield strength to compensate. And that is where bake hardening just saves the day. It's like this free boost of strength right at the end of the line.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanism. The thesis lays out the standard industrial recipe. You stamp the part, assemble the body, paint it, and then you bake it.
At about 170 degrees Celsius for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's the standard. But here's my skepticism. 170 degrees Celsius, I mean, in the world of metallurgy, that is, that's lukewarm.
It does seem low, doesn't it?
We're usually talking about annealing or tempering at like 800, 900 degrees. Is 170 really enough thermal energy to change the properties of steel? It feels like we're just baking cookies.
Right. Well, you're certainly not changing the grain structure or anything like that, but you are doing something very, very specific. You're waking up the carbon atoms.
Ah, this is the strain aging phenomenon.
Correct. So to understand this, we have to look at what happens when you stamp that hood. You're applying what's called pre-strain. You are physically stretching the crystal lattice of the iron. Das says the standard is around 2%.
And that stretching, it kind of tears up the floorboards, atomically speaking.
It creates dislocations.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can think of a dislocation as a wrinkle in an atomic rug. It's a defect,
Yeah.
a line of stress. Now, normally, metal deforms by moving these dislocations around. If they can move easily, the metal is soft.
So to make it hard, we have to stop those wrinkles from moving.
Precisely. This is where our hero, or maybe our mercenary, comes in. Interstitial solute carbon.
These are the tiny carbon atoms, right? The ones that are small enough to fit in the gaps between the iron atoms. They're not part of the structure. They're
Just
just
floating in the void.
right.
At room temperature, they're relatively stuck. But at 170 degrees, they get just enough kinetic energy to diffuse, to move.
Okay.
And because nature just hates high-energy states, these carbon atoms are drawn to those high-energy dislocations you made during stamping.
I used to think of it like a lock and key, but the thesis describes it more like a riot control situation. The dislocations are a rowdy crowd pushing forward. The carbon atoms are the security team,
That works.
but it's a specific type. The heat kicks in, and they rush to the front line, and they link arms right in front of the crowd. They pin the dislocation.
That's it. That's the Cottrell atmosphere.
Yeah.
That cloud of carbon atoms locks the defect in place.
Hmm.
Now, if you try to dent that car hood, You have to break that line of carbon before the metal will even move.
And that extra force required to break the line.
That's your bake hardening increment. That's the strength you gained.
Now, the thesis throws some math at us here. The two-thirds rule.
Yes.
And I usually glaze over at formulas, but this one seems to imply something about speed. Why two-thirds? Why isn't it just linear, you know, where 20 minutes gives you double the strength of 10 minutes?
It's because it's a diffusion process.
Mm.
So initially, there's this huge pull for the carbon to get to the dislocation. It rushes in. But as more carbon arrives, the crowd gets thicker. It gets harder for new carbon atoms to find a spot.
Ah, so it slows down.
It slows down. The hardening happens fast at first, and then it tapers off. That to the two-thirds exponent basically just describes that slowing arrival rate.
Which is good for car makers, I guess. You get most of your strength in the first few minutes.
Exactly. They want that line moving fast.
The source also brings up the Snook effect. I feel like this gets confused with the Cottrell atmosphere a lot, but the thesis is careful to distinguish them.
It is, yeah. The Snook effect is also about carbon strengthening, but the mechanism is totally different and, frankly, not as useful here. It isn't about atoms traveling across the lattice.
So what is it?
It's about atoms just rotating in place to align with stress.
Rotating.
Imagine the carbon atom is like an oval shape inside a square hole. When you pull on the metal, the square stretches into a rectangle. The carbon atom just flips 90 degrees to fit better, but that happens almost instantly.
So it's too fast.
Way too fast. And it's reversible. Des points out that for bake hardening, we need a permanent lock. The Snook effect is a flash in the pan.
Mm.
The Cottrell atmosphere is the permanent garrison.
Okay, so we have the mechanism, but this brings up a logistical nightmare that I hadn't even considered. If we're relying on carbon atoms moving around to harden the steel.
Mm, they don't stop moving just because the oven's
off. Exactly. They're moving at room temperature, too, just slower.
Yeah.
This brings us to the shelf life problem. I assumed steel lasted forever, but Das is saying this steel has an expiration date.
It's a huge issue. If you leave a coil of this bake-hardenable steel in a warehouse for, say, 3 or 4 months, it undergoes natural aging. The carbon diffuses on its own and locks up the lattice before you've even stamped it.
And if you try to stamp it after it's aged,
you get looters bands.
Which sounds like a 70s rock group, but I'm guessing it's not a good thing.
It's a visual disaster. The metal yields unevenly, and you get these jagged, flame-like patterns or ripples on the surface of the hood. Can't paint over them. The part is scrap.
So just imagine the cost. You've got millions of dollars of steel inventory, and if your supply chain gets backed up for a couple of months, that inventory could become useless for exterior panels.
That's why the chemistry has to be so precise. It's this balancing act, really, between nitrogen and carbon.
Right. The thesis frames nitrogen as the villain here. Why is that?
Nitrogen is smaller and faster than carbon. It diffuses much more rapidly at room temperature. So if you have free nitrogen in your steel, it'll age the metal in days, not months. It's just too unstable.
So you have to kill the nitrogen.
You have to fix it. You add things like aluminum or titanium to the melt, and they bond with the nitrogen and trap it, taking it out of the equation.
Okay, so nitrogen is in jail. That leaves carbon. But you can't get rid of the carbon because you need it for the oven later.
Exactly. You need Goldilocks carbon. And Dazos identifies a window of about 15 to 25 parts per million of free solute carbon.
15 to 25 parts per million. That is an absurdly small margin of error.
It is razor thin. If you go below, say, 3 or 5 ppm, you get no bake hardening. The security is just too small. The car door stays soft.
And if you go over?
You go over 50 or 60 ppm, the steel ages too fast in the warehouse. You get looters bands. You ruin the surface. So steel makers are walking this tightrope where a variation of 10 atoms in a million can ruin an entire batch.
Wow. It just really emphasizes that steelmaking isn't just about melting rocks anymore. It's precision chemistry.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of precision, I want to talk about the IF steel findings because this felt like a breaking the rules moment. Interstitial free steel is supposed to have, well, zero interstitials.
Right. No free carbon. Yeah. If steel is the premium stuff for really difficult shapes, it has extra titanium or niobium added specifically to vacuum up every last carbon atom. It's super soft, super formable. But by definition, it shouldn't bake harden.
Because there are no security guards to rush the gate.
Exactly. But Das found you can actually trick IF steel into bake hardening.
How?
It all comes down to the annealing temperature, that heating step before the final rolling. The standard practice is to anneal it. But Das tried pushing the temperature way up to around 850 degrees Celsius.
Okay, that's incredibly hot. What changes at 850?
You enter what's called the intercritical phase. At that temperature, you actually force some of those titanium carbon bonds to break. You dissolve some of the carbides back into the solution.
So you're releasing the prisoners.
In a very controlled way, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You free up just enough carbon atoms, maybe 10 or 15 ppm, to get that bake hardening effect, but without wrecking the deep drawability of the IF steel.
So manufacturers could have their cake and eat it too. Get the complex shape of IF steel, but also get the dent resistance of a bake hardening grade.
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah.
But measuring this stuff is tricky. You can't exactly see 15 ppm of carbon with a microscope. This is where Das used a technique called TEP thermoelectric power.
How does that work?
It measures the Seebeck effect. Basically, you apply a temperature difference across the metal and you measure the voltage it generates. Turns out, electrons hate crashing into carbon atoms. So the way the electrons scatter tells you exactly how much carbon is dissolved in the lattice. It's like listening to the traffic flow of electrons to count the obstacles.
That is incredibly clever. But let's move to the part of the thesis that felt the most futuristic, the neural networks.
Yes. Moving from physical metallurgy to computational metallurgy.
So the thesis uses artificial neural networks, ANNs, to predict the hardening response. But I have to ask why. We know the physics. We know about dislocations in carbon. Why do we need a black box AI to predict this? Can't we just calculate it?
You'd think so, but all the variables are nonlinear. It's not just more carbon equals more strength. You have the interaction of annealing temperature, cooling rate, the amount of prestrain, the composition. It all creates this multi-dimensional surface that's just very hard to model with simple equations.
Okay, so the AI is finding patterns that a human might miss. What did it find?
Well, the most interesting finding from the model was about prestrain. We said earlier that standard stamping stretches the steel about 2%.
Right. And I would assume if you stretch it 5% or 10%, you get even more hardening.
That's what intuition would suggest, right? More stretch equals more dislocation, so more places for carbon to lock. But the neural network showed the opposite.
Wait, really? The hardening goes down if you stretch it too much?
Significantly.
Mm-hmm.
The model predicted, and experiments later confirmed, that beyond about 4% or 5% strain, the big hardening increment actually drops.
Why? That seems so counterintuitive.
It's a supply and demand problem. When you go to really high strain levels, you generate a massive number of dislocations. But your carbon supply is fixed. Remember, we only have maybe 20 ppm.
So you have a riot that's just too big for the security team.
Exactly. You dilute the effectiveness. You have all these unpinned dislocations everywhere, so the metal can still move easily. The AI highlighted this point of diminishing returns.
That is a critical insight for a car designer. If you have a part that's being stamped really deeply, like a sharp corner on a fender, you might actually be losing strength in that specific spot.
Correct. It totally changes how you'd simulate the crash safety of that vehicle.
This leads perfectly to the final major concept in the thesis, which seems to solve this pre-strain problem entirely, the delta trip steel.
This is the cutting edge stuff.
Yeah. Up until now, everything required the steel to be stamped, physically stretched, to create those defects for the carbon to latch onto.
Right. No wrinkles, no locking.
But delta trip changes the rules.
It does. Delta trip uses what's called a bainitic transformation. It's a phase change inside the steel structure itself. As the steel cools in the specific way, some of the austenite transforms into bainite.
And why does that matter for hardening?
Because that transformation involves a volume expansion. The crystal structure literally gets bigger, and that internal expansion pushes against all the surrounding material.
It's stretching itself from the inside out.
Exactly. The chemistry creates the dislocations automatically. You don't need a stamping press to put them there. The phase change generates them.
That is so elegant.
It means you have a material that comes preloaded with defects, ready to be locked by carbon in the paint oven. So you get this massive bake hardening response. Das reports very high numbers, even if the part is barely formed at all.
It's like the steel is born ready.
It decouples the strength of the manufacturing shape. That gives designers a huge amount of freedom.
Wow. So we've gone from the showroom floor to the atomic lattice, through the headaches of aging steel, and into the world of AI and self-straining metals.
It's quite the journey for a piece of sheet metal.
It really changes the way I look at a car. I think most people think of manufacturing as, you know, welding and bolting things together. But this is alchemy. We're relying on invisible atoms migrating through a solid crystal while the car sits in a glorified pizza oven.
And if that migration doesn't happen, or if it happens too early, the car either isn't safe or it looks terrible.
So what's the big takeaway for you listening at home, aside from a newfound respect for 170 degrees Celsius?
I think the takeaway is about the invisible complexity of modern efficiency.
Oop.
We want cars that are light. We want them to get 50 miles per gallon. But we also want to walk away from a crash. The only way to get both is through this kind of atomic level engineering.
It's the tech that lets us do more with less.
Precisely. Bake hardening isn't just a neat trick. It's an essential technology for the green transition in the automotive world.
So I want to leave you with this final thought. Next time you see a car being painted, maybe in a video, or just in your mind's eye, don't just think about the color, think about the heat. That paint drying process is a structural event. The car that goes into the oven comes out a different machine than the one that went in.
Mm.
The paint didn't just make it pretty. The process of applying it is what keeps you safe.
It really redefines watching paint dry.
Turns out, it's the most exciting part of the entire assembly line.
Thanks for diving deep with us.
Always a pleasure.
See you on the next one.